Out on the Limb with Dr. Nicola Bird in partnership with Beauty and Wellness TV, your one stop for leading a happy, healthy, and successful life. Celebrating life and illuminating mind, heart, body, and soul.
Welcome, welcome. I am Dr. Nicola Bird. I am a psychotherapist, and I am the founder of Self-Imaging Therapy. Thank you for being here with me today at Out on the Limb. We're here to celebrate life, to illuminate the mind, heart, body, and soul. We have an amazing show. I'm very excited. The theme today is You Are Your Very Own Guru. We're going to explore how to make peace with food in our bodies, as well as claiming our power through interval yoga. So it's some exciting stuff today for sure. And so I'm very happy to introduce my first special guest, health coach and founder of Hunger for Happiness, Shannon Lagasse. Shannon is dedicated to changing the way women relate to themselves, their bodies, and the world around them. She's here to share strategies for self-love and self-compassion in the ways that we relate to food, to our bodies, and to our life. Thank you, Shannon, so much for being here. I am delighted to have you.
Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to talk to you guys today.
Yes, I think that the topic is such an important one. Eating disorders are described as a psychological illness. It's defined by abnormal eating patterns that involve either insufficient or excessive food to the detriment of a person's well-being, both in their physical and their mental health. There's bulimia nervosa, there's anorexia, there's binging, there's all kind of different eating disorders, and they're certainly known to be increasing all over the world, both among men and women, although it's more dominant amongst women. And in the Western world, it's certainly increasing. There's an increasing risk. It's nearly half of all Americans personally know someone with an eating disorder. So your topic is very important, one I'm very happy to really shed light on and explore and bring to consciousness. Because Shannon, you are a recovered anorexic, bulimic, and binge eater, and you've turned into a health coach, and your struggle with an eating disorder began when you were just in high school. Can you tell us what led to the onset?
My eating disorder was a combination of a lot of different things. So it was, there's the typical, overbearing mother, absent father kind of thing where usually, you have one or the other, and that can play into an eating disorder. Perfectionism, mm-hmm. for sure. I was top of my class. I was in all the different honor societies and extracurriculars. I have extra pages of my transcript for extracurriculars, and I was just always trying to do everything and just always trying to get it right. I think, I remember, when my eating disorder started to develop, what I was really focusing on was I just wanted to lose some weight, and so I was reading all about, different diets and stuff, and then it just became an obsession. It was one more thing that I had to get right, and I had to get perfect, and it just developed into this really unhealthy obsession with eating the right foods and not eating too much and losing weight and always trying to lose more weight, do more so I could be better.
So you then would identify, the root of this is the need, the perfectionism, the need for control, the need for to be right, and then that just manifested in these behavioral patterns.
I think it was that, and it was trying to avoid my life. I know a lot of people that I work with who have eating disorders. It's a way of expressing themselves when they don't have the words for it, or when they don't feel if they did say anything that it would even matter, and also to cover up how we're feeling. So I think an eating disorder is like an addiction, in that it's not so much, it's a symptom of a deeper emotional issue. It's just the manifestation, the physical outward manifestation of something that's going on the inside. So I had a lot of difficulties with my dad leaving us. He kicked my sister and I out of his home, and different other things going on in my family, different struggles in the family dynamic that were really difficult to deal with, and I was never really taught healthy coping mechanisms. I was just always taught to, like, just brush it under the table and never talk about it again. And so I didn't have any way of expressing, like, the pain and disappointment and the anger and frustration that I was feeling. And so I just channeled that into my relationship with food.
Well, it's so, you know, informative, and I think it's just so telling to really to be looking at really what's driving the behavior. Because, I mean, for listeners who aren't struggling with the eating disorder, this understanding, this can be attached or looked at from any situation that we're encountering, that what's driving behavior is something so much deeper rooted. And I think that's the deeper message in that, because, I mean, in my work with people, I mean, that perfectionism, that need for avoidance is so much part of a human behavioral patterns, and it can drive a lot of very unhealthy patterns, whatever we manifest that to be in our lives. And we had noise out there anyway, and so therefore we really, it's really very powerful to be looking at what's driving our actions, because again it can manifest in so many different ways. What did you do, Shannon? I mean, how were you able, because one of the things that I noticed that you labeled, which I think is very powerful, and it's so important, your label, you don't say you're recovering, you said you are a recovered. So you're giving us a perspective of empowerment that it doesn't have to define you. You don't have to be stuck struggling, that you can overcome. And I think that's a very important message. That's one of the things I was definitely attracted to what your message. I love your talk about that recovery and the fact that you are a recovered, not a recovering, which is a difference. And I'd love you to maybe illuminate us about those two differences and that journey for you.
Sure. I think I like the word, or I choose the word recovered versus recovering, because I really do think that it's, you know, an eating disorder is a coping mechanism. We're doing the best we can to take care of ourselves. And so me using an eating disorder, that was my way of taking care of myself. And now I have other coping skills. And that doesn't mean that sometimes I don't think about binging or purging or not eating. It's that I choose not to. And I think we all do that, you know. Like, I know that there are people that I know who they might think about going for a drink, or they might think about going for a cigarette, and then they choose not to. And I think that consistent choice not to is what makes you recover. If I continue to say that I'm recovering from my eating disorder, I'm going to continue to label myself in that way, and I'm going to play out those patterns. So I know even in working with emotional eaters and overeaters, if they keep telling themselves that they always binge, or that they, you know, that they're an emotional eater, they're never going to get rid of this problem, you know, what's the point of even working on it if it's hopeless? The more we label ourselves and identify with our eating disorder or dysfunctional relationship with food, the more we play into those patterns as a self-fulfilling prophecy. So I think it's helpful to identify and label these behaviors for what they are, you know, when you're first starting out, because if I didn't know that I was anorexic, like, I wouldn't have known what that, you know, what was going on, and, like, not what was wrong with me, but what I was using, what tool I was using. If you're not aware that you have a problem, you can't really do anything about it. But I think at some point that label becomes almost detrimental to your recovery, because as long as you continue to tell yourself that you're anorexic, you're going to continue to do things that an anorexic would do. And so I'm always, like, coaching clients and reminding myself to just shift that internal identity first. Like, the inner work is so much more important than the external work. We can try really hard to force ourselves to change our external behaviors, but until we change that internal way that we're dealing with things and looking at things, we're not going to be able to, it's going to be much more difficult to change those external behaviors. It's so much easier to just shift our identity to one of being healthy and whole and happy, and then reflecting that in our actions, than to try to force ourselves to do things that would be aligned with someone who's happy and healthy and whole, when we don't actually believe those things about ourselves.
Well, Shannon, that was just incredibly beautifully said. It's why I really wanted to highlight that point, because it's such a big part of that recovering process, and that shifting out of that identity and not being stuck in a label, that there are different levels to healing. And first, of course, when you're saying first level of consciousness, you have to understand it and recognize and identify it rather than deny it. So you own that for the moment, but that's just that moment of recognition, so you can have the self-awareness. Then the moving through those layers is then, now that I understand that and I'm self-aware, I can be mindful of this pattern. Now how do I break through it so that this no longer defines me? So what you have just expressed is so powerful. I think that message is so strong, and that's what I really find attractive about what you're doing, what your approach is, because it really helps to break out of that box that we can get stuck in. And so I'm very heartened by your work, and I'm heartened by what you said, and the listeners, that really breaks into empowerment. So, well, again, thank you for sharing that, and that's just a wonderful, wonderful, empowering way to create change. So, in your own journey to yourself, how did you then, you change those coping styles? Because you're talking about the coping styles, which I totally agree with, that it's how we learn to cope and how we learn to manage life that defines our successes or the degree of our challenges. What coping skills did you derive, and how did you come to those, and what changes did you see? Oh, I asked you lots of questions all at the same time.
I spent a couple years, like, on the tail end of my recovery, working at different retreat centers and just learning different schools of thought, and I was really just open to whatever might work, and I was just taking bits and pieces of what resonated with me and kind of leaving the rest. And that's really what I advocate for clients, is like, there's so many different tools out there, and you don't have to learn them all, and you don't have to do them all exactly the way that they're presented to you. You just have to find what works for you, and that could be a combination of different tools. So one of the biggest things I think that I learned was that our thoughts create our lives. And I remember that Wayne Dyer quote, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. And that quote, just I remember, like, you know, spun me. I'm terrible with idioms, whatever. Like, it just helped me change the way that I was looking at things. And when I started to study, like, inquiry, and I was working at the Option Institute and studying the Option Process Dialogue and getting to learn more about my thoughts and just realizing, like, all the ways that I was talking to myself and I was setting myself up for failure and unhappiness, like, through the way that I was thinking. And so that's a lot of what I was focusing on, is like, how do I change my thoughts and how do I change the way that I think about myself, the way that I think about my body and the way that I think about food. And also learning healthy coping skills, like how to healthfully express myself, like through movement, through dance, through a lot of it is like physical activity, because one of my teachers said, you know, emotions are energy in motion. And so it's just finding a way to express that. So whether it's through running or sports, or whether that's through crying or writing, it's just some way of taking what's inside and channeling it into something so that the energy is moving. It's not stuck in you and you're not stuffing it down or trying to get rid of it. And a lot of what I've been exploring lately too is like, whenever those emotions come up or whenever something happens that I really would prefer not to happen, is instead of trying to get rid of that feeling, just being with it and seeing what it has to offer, because I think every emotion and experience is coming our way because it's teaching us something. And if we try to resist it and if we try to push it down, we're not getting that. You know, it's like if someone offered you $100 and you kept, like, turning them away, what would the point in that be? Like, you wouldn't get this gift that someone's trying to give you just because it's not showing up maybe in the way that you want it to. So just being with whatever that experience is or whatever that emotion is and allowing it to just be. And that's been a huge, huge, like, shift in the way that I deal with things. And it's not about getting rid of emotions now. It's just about, like, how can I best be with this and how can I learn from this? And when I shifted to that perspective, it was just so much easier to handle those ups and downs of life.
Because you gave that inner struggle and that fight with yourself was just reduced to, you could reduce that, and especially help to change that perfectionist mindset from one thing, you have to be a certain particular way, so it could break through some of that, those kind of ways of relating to yourself and to the world. We just have a couple more minutes left. I have two questions for you. One of the questions that I just like want to ask, what do you think was the hardest thing for you? Because you're talking about, you know, it's an eating disorder. What do you think was the hardest thing for you to change?
I think the hardest part of changing my thoughts was just having to come to terms with a lot of what's happened in my life. And having to, like, not that you have to label it, but looking at it for what it is and not deluding myself anymore about, you know, oh, like, that was okay. Like, it took a really long time for me to accept that my parents had been abusive as a child, like, that not everybody gets the wooden spoon reference. Like, a lot of people, when I talk about it, will look at me like I have three heads, and they're like, what's the wooden spoon? I was like, you weren't chased around the yard with the wooden spoon? What? But to just to come to terms with things like that, and then to also realize how much of my own life I screwed up for myself, that it wasn't about what other people were doing or did to me or whatever people said or whatever happened. It was that the way that I was choosing to deal with it was what was creating my unhappiness. So I couldn't blame anybody else except myself anymore. And that kind of sucked to just be like, I'm responsible for everything. And to have to take full ownership and responsibility of the times when I screwed things up for myself, or I, you know, made myself miserable and unhappy for a period of time, and I could say I kind of like wasted that time because of the way that I was looking at things, and that wasn't anybody's fault except my own.
Well, that's certainly very empowering, that the coming to take that responsibility for the self. And we have our conditioning, and those are the experiences that we have that certainly explains some of the actions that we take and the choices that we make or the unhealthy choices that we make. But the only person that can change what we've learned or our patterns is ourselves, and that's where that responsibility comes from. And taking ownership for that is the way that we empower ourselves. And even though, as you said, it can be very difficult, it's also the route to our ability to really empower ourselves and gain the control that we're looking and really become healthy. I love your message. Shannon, I would really love you. Again, this is our final wrap-up. Can you just leave the listeners with a tip, a takeaway for them in their own lives, for their personal empowerment?
I think the most important thing that I would want people to remember is just that you get to choose how you think and how you respond to things. Life doesn't happen to you, it happens through you. So whatever is going on, if you can find a way to put it in a positive perspective, and I was sharing this with my friends last night because we were talking about, you know, when things happen in your life and nothing's going the way that you want it to, do you, like, give up on God or universe or spirit or whatever you call it, or do you trust that whatever's happening is happening for your highest good? And it really is just a matter of perspective. And I would honestly rather spend my entire life telling myself that something good is right around the corner and then never have it happen than think that for the rest of my life things are just going to suck. And so really, like, just offering that perspective is everything. The way that you look at things is more important than in what they actually are. And it's not about being crazy or deluding yourself. It's just about having trust and faith that everything is going to work out, and that when you can find a way to find the humor in things or find the positive parts of things, that's really what's going to help you to move forward. Because as long as you stay stuck in that negative, you know, spiral of self-loathing and shame and wallowing in pity, that all of that is going to keep you stuck where you are, and it's not going to help you to move forward to where you want to be. So just shifting your perspective can help you to lead a much happier, healthier life.
Shannon, that's a beautiful takeaway. I really thank you for sharing your incredible journey of recovery from all these many different aspects, from the eating disorders to your early life experiences and coming out on the other side happy, healthier, whole, and it's a very powerful message, and now sharing that with the world and enabling others in their lives for transformational personal empowerment. So listeners out there, you can find out more about Shannon at her website, hungerforhappiness.com. That's hungerforhappiness.com. You can find her information in the messages below as well, and the links below. And Shannon works with people everywhere online, so certainly check her out. And thank you, Shannon, for being here and sharing your amazing journey and your incredible strategies for recovery.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure and a joy.
Many blessings. It's been a pleasure. Bye, hon.
Thanks.
Good stuff. Lots of information and knowledge and awareness for us. And we have more. Yep. We're going to take a quick break from our sponsor. Don't go anywhere. You're not going to want to miss the incredible insights from my next amazing guest, YouTube yoga star, a person who I am just a huge fan of, Ali Kamenova.
If you want the best way to heal from life's challenges, get Erica Tucci's powerful book, Radiant Survivor, How to Shine and Thrive Through Recovery from Stroke, Cancer, Abuse, Addiction, and Other Life-Altering Experiences. Erica Tucci's remarkable book of healing is available now on Amazon. Find out more at www.radiantsurvivor.com.
Welcome back. You're tuned in to Out on the Limb Radio with Dr. Nicola Bird. And my next special guest is someone who has been in my home for many years, but who I'm talking to for the first time one-on-one, YouTube yoga star Ali Kamenova. I regularly do Ali's practice, and I'm a true fan and a praiser for many years. So I'm really excited to have her here. Ali was recently featured on Huffington Post as one of the top 10 yoga channels on YouTube, and I can say this is very well deserved. Ali has created an online space where yogis can connect, support each other, offer love to each other, and motivate each other on their path, and she is here to share strategies on how we can develop a full and complete yoga and fitness practice in our very own home. Ali, thank you for being here. I am so happy to have you.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm also very happy to be able to talk to you.
Oh, yes. I mean, it's always fascinating because I feel like you're in my home all the time. And I'm like, oh, I just did Ali today and Ali this and Ali that, as if you're, you know, it's so intimate. So it's really nice. And I'm fascinating. I think that your method is very interesting, you know, because yoga is a physical, mental, and spiritual practice of discipline. An interval training is more of a physical training that involves low to high intensity. And you created a fusion of these two different disciplines. So it's very interesting. Can you tell us why you did this and tell us a little more about your particular approach, interval yoga?
Well, I always, I've been practicing yoga for over 10 years, and I always missed the dynamic aspect of in the practice. I always considered yoga to be not enough just on its own. There was always something more I needed in it. I used to snowboard and rock climb and sometimes run or something more dynamic, more kind of almost more childlike activity within the practice. So naturally, I started also doing interval training, and those two came together very naturally. Through the years, I just started combining them and bringing them together, and this actually created a more well-rounded, much more well-rounded practice physically and surprisingly spiritually. Really not surprisingly, but spiritually, it also allows the mind to completely be right there, empty on the spot. The more dynamic we get, the breath gets going, and it's just it becomes a very beautiful experience where we can just be present.
Well, I'm a fan, and that's what I find so compelling about doing your practice is that it does combine. I mean, I love all of those things too, and that you brought them all together. I mean, if I just do 40 minutes of you, it's so comprehensive. I'm like, I can't believe what Ali can get into 40 minutes. Like, there's this completeness, and it is absolutely exactly what you said, that whole, integration. Have you... And it's interesting because that you've taken, because I mean, yoga again has been, it is mindfulness and that whole, and that you brought, because I mean, when we think about traditional exercise, there's a kind of a competitive edge to it, and yoga is the opposite of that competitive edge. It's to be with yourself. Have you ever had that come up as a question, like, or do people ever confront that how do you get away from that and at the same in your yoga practice, the interval yoga, so that it just remains like a non-competitive but still integrated practice?
Well, one of the, of course, it always comes up, the competitiveness in yoga always comes up as one of maybe the drawbacks of mm-hmm. practice. And nowadays with Instagram and with the yoga studios and everything, it's just there is this competitive element of yoga where we're just trying to, we're trying to keep up, we're trying to maintain a physical or external practice that impresses others rather than impress our own selves with what we can let go of or how present we can be. So that is one of the reasons why I actually transitioned completely in the past, I'd say 2 years, completely transitioned online, because one of my favorite and one of the ways I personally connected to yoga originally was through a home practice, a self-guided or a guided practice at home, which I noticed allowed me to be more present physically in my body as well, and to be completely relieved from that competitive edge or from that external validation that we may need in a yoga studio. So basically, I transitioned into teaching what I find very beneficial in my own practice, and I don't just advocate doing for everybody just doing yoga at home only, but I just find that being able to develop a home practice and a self-guided or a self-practice is extremely beneficial to deepening our body awareness and our physical awareness, as well as deepening our practice. And that can be a supplement to a studio practice, or just can be your own thing, the only thing you practice, basically.
Well, no, I love my home practice. Yes, no, and it's such a gift. It's such an incredible gift that you're giving. I think it really changes lives, and it creates opportunity for everyone. I was a single mother for many years, and the ability to have something that you could access. And so what do you say to people, for instance, any listeners out there who they've never done yoga and about going online and not having someone present, like in a class?
I have created quite a few classes for complete beginners, and I'm very thorough with, I try to be as thorough as I can with the explanation of the poses, and I find that is quite enough for most people. And there is always people that should probably go to a yoga studio at least a few times, if not for a while, so that they can get that feedback if they're this type of person that needs the external feedback of how they're aligning. And they can basically use a home practice and a studio practice combined together to develop their practice. But I do have a whole system a huge, actually, playlist of beginner classes that are quite enough. Actually, there is a lot of proof in my community, because there is so many people that started just with my beginner classes, and now they're at advanced level, and a lot of them have never been in a studio. So a lot of people can actually benefit from the beginner classes and learn just as effectively as if they were learning with a teacher in person.
Well, I think that's very important. I think that's I'm so grateful that you're saying that, because for people who haven't tried it, who are afraid, who think that they could hurt themselves, they don't know what they're doing, the fact that you're, and I can say that to be absolutely true from your work, and you'll have, you also do these little small, explaining each pose, you'll give little mini lessons too. So there's just so much support that you give in terms of, for everyone to really be able to do yoga and to create fitness in their life. And I also, and I think that your particular approach is so well-rounded, again, that whole interval yoga practice, and it allows us to have to get all your needs met all in one comprehensive, you know. So I think that's really powerful. So you've described the home practice and doing the home practice. What led you to start doing these videos online and providing this content for others?
Can you repeat the question?
Sorry, yes. So what
this is the very last
to,
sentence.
What led you to creating these online classes?
I was starting to develop in the studios I was teaching. I was starting to develop this fusion style of yoga, and I was already teaching it in studios, but there is quite a bit of stigma in the yoga community, and there is resistance in the yoga community to any type of change in the traditional way we do yoga, or especially the vinyasa yoga community would kind of frown upon anything that is a little more physical, even though yoga in general in the Western world is a physical practice, very physical. But I just started to feel the need to actually offer a lot of this type of classes full on. And in the studios, I always had to hold back a little bit and kind of offer whatever people are used to. So I wanted to share this. Personally, I had the need to share this. And also, I wanted to share this type of a home practice, because another aspect of a home practice is actually I find it to be preventative for injuries because of the non-competitive element. We are able to hear our bodies, see how we perform, hold back when we have to, instead of trying to kind of jam ourselves into a pose just so that we flow with the rest of the class. So basically, I felt the need to express more of this style of yoga in a place where, in a platform that allows me to do that. And I also noticed that there aren't there were maybe very few advanced classes on YouTube at the time I started. And there was basically a void. There was something missing in the YouTube community within the more intense, more powerful power yoga style classes. So I naturally wanted to offer that. And my my original, when I first started YouTube, my original goal was to upload 20 full-length, powerful, strong classes that can serve the community. And everything started from there. Once I uploaded them, it just kind of, the whole process got started.
Well, I can certainly see why, because it is very unique and it is very inspiring, and we have so many choices available, and it's so comprehensive. Getting back to that competitive side, because I think that we've been talking about that here and there in so much of this conversation, but how does when we get really competitive, it's really our critical mind getting in. We have to be better than what we think we should be, and we're really being hard on ourselves. It really takes away from the whole principle of yoga or wellness or health. So even on our own, people can get into that. What do you say to helping? Creating home practice, your particular practice, is to help really reduce that. But again, so much of humans, we struggle with that. Is there anything else that you can say to anyone that's practicing to really reduce that competitive side, even on their own?
It's a change of perspective. Basically, we can use anything as a positive motivation, or we can use it as a self-destructive pattern or behavior. So as long as we keep the balance and use, maybe if someone is naturally very competitive, if they use it in a balanced way, just come back to their practice and be silent or empty-minded for an hour, they can use that. And also, I always replace being or getting achieving certain poses, I replace that type of thinking with always growing, always transforming, always getting to, always growing, because we're not supposed to change, but we're always supposed to grow. We're always supposed to be, to transform. So the transformational aspect of yoga is a beautiful thing, and as long as we shift, it's a small shift in the mind that we're actually growing, but we are in the perfect place at the moment where we are at. This is perfect. And if we are never to change a single thing about ourselves, we are perfect. So starting from this place, then we can start growing. And it's just an adding a benefit to our already perfection or achieved perfection. So that is my main message. You are at your perfect place. Everything else is just we are having fun and we're flowing. We're growing.
I love that. I think that's just so important. I think just that whole principle of growth. And because we have so much aspects of ourselves that we can express and learn about, so that we're allowing ourselves to explore different parts of ourselves and grow into that rather than be limited. But nothing, but it's coming from a place, as you said, of positive motivation versus negative thinking. We're not good enough. We're good enough. But there's so many parts of us that we can grow into. So that's just the way you, such a powerful and important message and so comprehensive. Ali, what would you say has been the most important takeaway for you in terms of creating this interval yoga and your practice? How do you think it has benefited your life or that of others that you work with? What's the greatest benefit?
Yeah, I will answer about how it benefited my life. Just the practice itself, it simplified everything for me. It gave me freedom, just the fact that I shortened the practice. So you don't need an hour and a half every day of very good discipline and of repetitiveness in order to be considered a yogi or in order to be considered advanced yogi. You can actually achieve quite a bit in a shorter amount of time, and you are not sacrificing the spiritual aspect of it, because ultimately you keep coming to your mat every day because it's much more achievable than an hour and a half. It's not always something people can commit to. So it gives longevity to our practice, and it simplifies things. Because I always try to stay away from dogmatic ways of thinking, and I like to break up patterns or dogmatic ways of attaching ourselves to things. And as soon as someone says, oh, the practice has to be only spiritual or only physical or an hour and a half, or it has to be traditional Indian stuff, I try to break away from that, because those are attachments, and I want to stay fluid and flow with what serves the body and the mind best, and the emotional body, of course, best. So that is the benefit. It has given me freedom, and I hope it has given freedom to everybody else that's using my classes.
Well, I really respect what you've done and what you are doing.
Thank you.
And I think that every generation, when we move forward with things, that it's not taking away from anything that has been already developed or a tradition. It's adding to tradition. It's letting it grow and finding new breath and new life and new ways. And our ability as human beings to create more is what is a beautiful thing, and what you've done is just tremendous. And I love it. It's changed my life. I I love you dearly, and I'm grateful to have you. And I want, and you know, I certainly want to share your work with the world because I think it's just fantastic. And you're a gift. You're a huge gift, and it's so amazing that the world can have access to such incredible work that you're doing.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. It's certainly well deserved. And Ali, and you know what I love too is that you're so cute when you come out. You have a hat on. You do like you just allow us to be whoever we are. It doesn't, and I like that you just it's just open. You know, be whoever you are. Do it your way, and allow yourself to flourish. And that's a huge takeaway. So as a final wrap-up, can you give us a takeaway tip for the listeners out there that you'd like to leave them with in terms of their own personal empowerment?
Definitely. We are on the edge of evolving yoga. We are not changing it in Western ways or we're not trying to take the traditional elements out of yoga. We are evolving the practice and allowing naturally the practice to grow into its next level. So we're not just growing ourselves, or we're not just personally evolving. We're evolving the whole yoga. We are on the edge of evolving the yoga movement. And the personal tip is I want to empower, I want my message, my yoga message and my classes, I want them to be a tool that empowers people to take their own health, their own healing, even their own getting in shape into their own hands. And I want to give them the freedom to do that at home, uncomplicated, just a mat or just a floor and your own body weight. And it's perfectly and completely, it's a complete practice and it's perfectly enough. So I want to put the power back into people's hands that they are their own yoga teacher, they're their own fitness trainer, they're their own healer, even massage therapist maybe, they're their own leader or their own guru. They can lead themselves. We are a part of a new era where things are changing, and now the guru is much less an external thing, and it's much more something within. We are internally, we have all the answers. It's all within.
Well, I love your takeaway. It's such a powerful message, and it's so much one that we all need to be able to shift our lens to understand how powerful we really are. And I'm so grateful for you to coming on sharing this and also providing that access for people to learn how powerful they really are. And everyone anywhere can start. If you've never done yoga, you can certainly do yoga with Ali. Ali has Ali's all on YouTube. She has her own website, alikamanova.com. That link is below, but certainly just Google interval yoga, that's interval yoga, and you will find Ali. So absolutely check out Ali. I can attest to her for the changes it's made in my life, and it's amazing, amazing work. And I love your all that you're doing, your message, your approach, your methodology. Great work. Thank you so much, Ali, for being on the show and sharing all of this with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're a blessing. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure. Yes. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, bye. Well, this has been a great show. The whole, we are our very own guru, and that's a very powerful message that we have shared today, and the means to become that. There's so much available for us to create empowerment in our lives, and these amazing guests that we've had today have certainly shared wonderful ways for us to, again, be our own guru. This is Dr. Nicola Bird. To get more insights into how you can lead your best life possible, go to my website. It's www.thewellnessnetwork.com. That's the/wellness/network.com. You can join my mailing list. Check out my amazing experts there. and you'll get incredible tips and tools to create the amazing life that you deserve. Thank you for tuning in. Remember to spread the joy and share Out on the Limb with all of your friends and the network as well. And keep in mind that sometimes you do need to go out on that limb to achieve the happy, the healthy, and successful life that you absolutely deserve. I'm Dr. Nicola Burr. See you right here tomorrow for another insightful, entertaining segment of Out on the Limb.
You're tuned into Out on the Limb Radio with Dr. Nicola Burr in partnership with Beauty and Wellness TV. Tune in Monday to Friday, 5 p.m. Eastern and 2 p.m. Pacific.